1320 WILS, live in Lansing. Great to have you here. I'm Michael Cohen. By the way, for your thoughts and your feedback is absolutely precious to us because we get a really clear idea of what you think and what you want to hear more of. Send us an email at ccrecap@gmail.com, ccrecap@gmail.com. Let's talk about tonight, what we're about to find out, Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, and a lot more. We're joined by Dr. Herb London, president of the London Center for Policy Research, the co-author of his latest book is The Encyclopedia of Militant Islam. Dr. London, great to have you on WILS.
Well, pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
We started the show talking to a former columnist at the Toronto Star. He wrote a book called Being Muslim. We talked about that shooting in Quebec City, but he basically said he's got a major issue with this ban. He says it's dangerous for us to conflate militant Islam is radical Islam and basically put that on all Muslims. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, it's not a ban on all Muslims. That's only in seven war-torn states where there is not any documentation. I mean, if you went to Aleppo today and someone wanted to come to the United States, how do you get records from that part of the world? Go to Somalia and try to get records. I mean, it's absurd. There aren't records in the Sudan. So if you are dealing with people who are coming into this country, you want to know who they are, what they stand for, what they're trying to do, what they want to accomplish. Right. If people are here to commit murders, obviously you don't want them in the United States. So this is a national security question.
Muslims that say, look, they're all Muslims who say they're all being blamed for these acts of a very small number of Muslims out there. What do you say to those concerns?
How many Indonesians are prevented from coming into the United States? Where is the ban on Indonesia? That's the largest Muslim country in the world. The second largest Muslim country. How many Pakistanis are banned from coming into the United States? The third largest Muslim country is India, which has almost as many as Pakistan. How many are banned in the United States? These are countries that have records.
What?
Even Saudi Arabia. There are records in Saudi Arabia. So if you have a country that can provide documentation, they are not prevented from coming into the country, even if they are Muslim countries. So the argument that you're conflating the two is absurd. It's not accurate. It's only in seven war-torn regions for 90 days, and it's a moratorium on the entry into the United States during that 90-day period.
So what should we do, Dr. London, what should we do after the 90 days, then?
It'll be reevaluated, and a decision will be made whether, in fact, we can obtain records or cannot. If we cannot, some of this may be done indefinitely. Syria, for example, does represent a very significant problem. I don't know where you get records in a place like Syria.
What do you make of the reaction we're seeing by the media and in the airports also?
Well, I think that the reaction on the part of many is what I would call a form of mass hysteria. I was at a rally, and I wanted to see what was happening in a rally downtown Manhattan. We had a couple of thousand people, and the tears and the emotion, and Senator Schumer getting up with tears rolling down his eyes, and saying the Statue of Liberty is now crying as well. The dark corners of American life, God knows, concentration camps are going to open tomorrow. It was so absurd, so ridiculous, that even if I tried to exaggerate and caricature what was going on, I cannot do so. Look, you could be opposed to this policy, but to draw a kind of conclusion about fascism comes to America when, in fact, we have a moratorium on seven Muslim states for which there are not any records, strikes me as bizarre in the extreme.
Does it make sense to you, though, that when Muslims say, even if they're not impacted by this ban, they feel that they're somehow being unfairly looked upon and even blamed just for being Muslim for some of these attacks?
Where were they during the Obama administration when he had a limit of 50,000 Muslims, the same limit that exists today? Where were they when Jimmy Carter had a ban in Iran? Muslims couldn't come in from Iran. I don't quite understand why it's Trump. It's not Trump. It's the left wing that wants to delegitimize this presidency. That's the issue. It is not the policy. The policies are not so different from policies in the past.
Dr. Herb London?
We have had exceptions. We have had presidents who say there are some nations from which records cannot be obtained. We do not want to in any way jeopardize the security of Americans.
Yeah. Do we need to go further than this? Should there be vetting in terms of finding out online activity, that kind of thing that's being discussed?
The question is always resources. How much can we possibly do? The FBI knows there are approximately 1,000 terrorist cells within the United States at this moment. Hopefully none of them commit evil deeds, but they are all capable of doing so, and that's why they're here. So again, how much can you spend? How much can you investigate? To what degree do you have to honor civil liberties? I mean, look, we have a balance between the civil liberties that I cherish in the United States and, of course, protecting the security of America. They are not only harmonious. They're not always harmonious. Mm-hmm. And so what you've got to do is to try to use the courts to arrive at an understanding of where security ends and civil liberties begin and vice versa.
Hmm. Yeah, how does radical Islam view our civil liberties?
Well, radical Islam views it very favorably because they want to use our civil liberties to destroy our civil liberties. Look, George Santayana once made an interesting statement. He said, the first and overarching responsibility of a tolerant man is to be intolerant to intolerance. Hmm. How do you allow intolerance to occur in a free society? Because it'll only mean that tolerance will be destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Do you think moving forward we're going to have to make more compromises on civil liberties then?
Well, there will be compromises depending, of course, on what occurs in the field. I mean, there are Americans that are killed. There'll be a call for further investigation, and there may very well be some compromise that has to be achieved. Mm-hmm. Look, this is not easy. These are not easy decisions. We're living in a very uneasy period. And as long as there's the possibility of violence, as long as there's the possibility of terrorism, we've got to take whatever actions are appropriate in order to protect life and limb.
Now, I'm talking to Dr. Herb London with the London Center for Policy Research. This announcement tonight, it's going to be apparently either Judge Neil Gorsuch or Judge Thomas Hardiman for the Supreme Court. Is there one you favor yourself?
I like them both. I know that, you know, I've actually gone through the list that was provided by the Federalist Society and given out by Trump to members of the press. Mm-hmm. I thought on the whole the list was really outstanding. So I would not be opposed to either one of them. My argument, however, is slightly different. It's not so much the man as the principle. The principle that I want to see is Article 3 of the Constitution, which suggests that the court is involved in reviewing decisions that are made by the Congress. That is, the court is involved in a process called judicial review.
Okay,
it comes out of the Dartmouth case. Look,
are you saying they have not been doing that?
No, the court has been making legislation. Huh. Well, look at the Obergefell decision. One person on the court decided that homosexual marriages should exist in America. Now, whether you're in favor or not in favor, to what degree has there been a national referendum on that issue?
So the court should not have taken up the case at all, you're saying?
I don't think so. I don't think they should have taken up the case. And I don't think one man should have made that decision. Tony Kennedy made that decision for America. It's distinctly inappropriate. The court should not adopt a case of that kind. And the court should not be in the business of making legislation. Now, this is a principle that I hold to, which I believe is part of the original stance of Scalia.
Yeah, and but that's what I would like to see in a judgment. What if the court feels that certain legislation is unconstitutional? How are they to act then?
If they feel it's unconstitutional, they should say so. That doesn't mean that they have to make new legislation. If a piece of legislation is unconstitutional, the court has an obligation to say it's unconstitutional and should obviously wipe it off the books.
Right, but
I have no problem with that.
In terms of gay marriage, they basically knocked down laws, do they not, to make that legal?
Well, but again, what I'm trying to suggest here, in some sense, this case was unprecedented. Mm-hmm. It does not come under the purview of what one would regard as the essential features of the Third Amendment, of the Article 3 in the Constitution, which talks about the role of judicial review, the review of other cases that have come before the court. The court is not in the business of making legislation. There are members of the court who have a kind of latitudinarian view of what the court should be and what the Constitution should be. The view of the living Constitution as something so elastic that it can mean almost anything is not a position that I hold and not a position that I think most Americans hold.
Yeah. And what's with this one judge, how much of an effect is that going to have on the court, do you think?
Well, it makes the court 5-4. It gives the conservatives an edge. And again, it's very important. In the two candidates that you cited, I think both are in their 50s. So there's the possibility that they'll be around for a long time, at least a generation.
Hmm. On the other side, the concern is Roe versus Wade and the court potentially overturning abortion rights. Do you think that's something we'll see?
Well, I doubt that very much. I doubt it very much. But when you talk about rights, this is another invented right. Mm-hmm. I'm not, don't misunderstand what I'm about to say to you. It's not a question of whether you're for or against abortion. It's a question of how you deal with a matter of that kind. If every state in the United States said, you know, we're going to put this on the ballot, we'll have a plebiscite on this matter. We'll have a vote on whether we should have abortion or should not have abortion.
Mm-hmm.
That, it seems to me, is a far more valid way to determine whether this is appropriate for America or not than to simply dump this into the Supreme Court and have nine justices make a decision for America.
So basically, you're saying the Supreme Court should kind of stay out in general. What is there a recent case where you feel they were appropriate in stepping in?
Well, I think that the court has been far too active on both sides of the ledger, by the way, than the court should be. I think that if you take the originalist position that I'm adopting here, then it seems to me that the court should act in abeyance with the Constitution rather than to revise the understanding of Article
2. Is it that they can't help themselves? Is the powers there?
Well, can't help themselves because what has happened is the court, like almost every other institution in America, has been politicized. Mm-hmm. And the consequence of that, look at the Roberts decision when it came to Obamacare. I mean, it was very, very obvious. He had to call it a tax, even though it was passed with the understanding it would not be a tax. Because he said, because it's a tax, I can now vote in favor of it. Now, this is bizarre. He is inventing history in order to satisfy an ideological stance. Mm-hmm. This I would regard as a political position.
Yeah, and that kind of came out of nowhere. Do you imagine him showing more of his true colors, Judge Roberts?
Very hard to say. I don't know what the true colors are. In some instances, you have Supreme Court justices who are selected because they're conservative and they turn out to be quite liberal. Earl Warren being a good example. I mean, there are many examples where you have justices who are thought to be very liberal and turn out to be quite conservative. Mm-hmm. So you can't be entirely sure. What I want, however, is something different, and that is a commitment to the precept that the court will engage in judicial review. That's its job.
Do you think we'll hear that asked of these judges during their confirmation hearings?
I think so. I think you will hear that. Mm-hmm. I think the judges that you've mentioned both are originalists. I think you will hear something like that. And I think that what they'll say is, look, we're not taking a stand pro or against abortion. That's not the position. The position is, should this be a matter that is brought to the attention of the court? That's somewhat mm-hmm. different.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like any time the power is there, they want to use it, whether it's the court or the executive orders by the president. Do you see any problem there, by the way, with the way Donald Trump's using power at this point?
Well, look, I do have concerns about that, and I have concerns about the use of executive decisions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't believe in the imperial presidency. Here again, the role of the president is carved out very nicely in our Constitution. We have presidents over the last four or five that have assumed, arrogated to themselves, an authority that the Constitution does not provide. And again, I don't like the idea of making executive decisions from the White House that overlook or disregard the position of the Congress.
Yeah, there's no stopping it, though, is there?
Well, there probably isn't, not at this time, because what Trump is attempting to do at this moment is undo what Obama did during the 8 years he was in office. Yes, you're probably right. Probably no way of stopping it at this time.
And Dr. Herb London, president of the London Center for Policy Research, author of many books, including his latest, The Encyclopedia of Militant Islam. Dr. Herb London here on WILS. Dr. London, thanks.
Well, always a pleasure to be with you. All the best.
Let's talk again.